Hi, this is Joel Hodson. I'm the creator of Mystery Science Theater 3000. You're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, cheesy movie lovers and pop culture fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Man, it was movie riffing week right here in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio, the capital of the Buckeye State. Yes, it was. Man, I had some fun. Two hilarious live shows came to town over the course of three nights. Big movie riffing week. First, Joel Hodgson, creator of the landmark TV series Mystery Science Theater 3000. He was here with the cast of the new MST3K series on Netflix. Their tour, MST3K Live, Watch Out for Snakes. It made a stop at the Davidson Theater right here in Columbus, Ohio. The following two nights, man, this was fun. The mad scientists from the original MST3K, Trace Beaulieu and Frank Conniff, they brought their live show, The Mads Are Back, to the Gateway Film Center. I got to see both shows. Amazing. Big thanks, by the way, to both Sheila Kenny at Right On PR and Joe Martin with The Mads for their assistance with everything. Big thanks to them. Now, if you're a fan of the original series, MST3K, the new series, the new reboot on Netflix, or if you're just a fan of incredibly funny folks making fun of really, really bad movies, you have got to check out these live shows. If they're anywhere near you, just go. If they're not coming anywhere near you right now, if there's nothing scheduled, then convince theater owners in your area to bring these shows to your town. I'm telling you what, you won't regret it. Fantastic night of comedy with both. Now, those three gents I mentioned, Joel, Trace, and Frank, I got to chat with all of them about Mystery Science Theater 3000, the current live shows that they're all doing. I'll be bringing you those interviews in just a moment. Before I get to those chats, though, I want to mention the venues themselves right here in Columbus, because in addition to these fantastic live shows that I get to see and that people were thrilled with when they came here, they've got a lot of other cool stuff that they're bringing to Columbus all this summer and in the months ahead. The Columbus Association for the Performing Arts, CAPA, C-A-P-A, and the Gateway Film Center. CAPA is continuing to run the summer film series at the Ohio Theater. And longtime listeners of Comic Book Central, you know my love for the summer movie series there. Always some really great stuff. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade was there this week. You know, I love Indiana Jones. Very cool Roger Moore tribute coming up with the James Bond flick, For Your Eyes Only. That's coming up there. Whose Line Is It Anyway? The current cast of the TV show. They're bringing the improv comedy to the Davidson Theater. So be sure to check out CAPA, CAPA.com for more information on all that. At the Gateway Film Center. Look, I mentioned James Bond. You want Bond, James Bond, they've got him. It is the summer of Bond at the Gateway Film Center. Each and every 007 flick. Yes, I'm even talking about the odd ones. The original Casino Royale back in the 60s. Never Say Never Again with Sean Connery. They're bringing them all back. 4K restoration. They're showing in order all summer long. They also have Cult 101, crazy cool cult films. They're showing those as well. So gatewayfilmcenter.org, that's the place you go to find out more. So if you're in Columbus, you want to find out more about both of those places, check them out. Now, if you check out the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net, everything I'm talking about today, links to everything we're going to be mentioning today, you're going to find those links in the show notes. So be sure to check out comicbookcentral.net, the show notes, everything's going to be in there. All right, my first chat of the episode. It's with the comedy genius behind Mystery Science Theater 3000, Joel Hodgson. Look, it's a solid concept he developed nearly 30 years ago. It still holds up today. It's a dude and his robots cracking really funny jokes, full of pop culture references, riffing, if you will, over an incredibly bad movie. It was a great concept 30 years ago. It holds true today. Now, look, you longtime listeners of Comic Book Central know I chatted with Joel at Monster Bash in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, way back on episode 34. So if you haven't heard that chat yet, you're going to want to check that out. We talked about the genesis of the show and Joel's thoughts at the time on a possible return of MST3K. This was before the huge Kickstarter campaign. Well, it is back. It is back in a big, big way. Close to $6 million raised on that Kickstarter campaign to bring the movie riffing show back. 14 new episodes on Netflix. Check them out if you haven't already. They're awesome. Features a brand new cast, including Jonah Ray, Patton Oswalt, Felicia Day, so many others. some return of some originals as well. And now we've got a live version of the show. Warning movie riff lovers across the nation to watch out for snakes.
Hey, I'm Joel Hodson, the creator of Mystery Science Theater 3000, and I'm proud to announce that MST3K is having its first live nationwide tour. I'll be on hand, too, to produce the event and introduce you to the new cast, but here's Kinga and Max to give you the details.
Hey, Artie, throw up the Starfield.
Starfield in the hole!
The long-running Peabody Award-winning movie riffing series.
Which became the record-breaking largest ever Kickstarter campaign for film and television.
And then became the hit Netflix original series.
Now embarks on its first triumphant live tour.
It's the Mystery Science Theater 3000 Live Watch Out for Snakes Tour. Featuring professional space captive Jonah Heston, along with his robot pals Tom Servo, Crow, and Gypsy.
Legal disclaimer, robot voices subject to change without warning or notice.
With special guest MC, Pearl Forrester's clone, Cynthia Forrester, plus the Boneheads.
Watch Jonah and the Bots live riff the California Caveman classic, EGA, in its entirety.
Watch out for snakes.
With all new riffs. With special video visits by Kinga and Max from Moon 13.
Wait, video visits? We're not going? Oh, man. Touring would have been so fun.
You know you can't leave the moon? What with that problem with your flap?
No one's supposed to know about that.
Don't worry, Max. I'll cut it out in post. Probably. If I remember.
Oh, you're the best.
Let's check in with Jonah and the Bots.
The live tour is coming soon.
That's right.
Can't wait for all the cocktail parties and fancy soirees.
That's right. This is going to be our happening, and it freaks us out.
Well, actually, I think we still got to just go down there and watch bad movies and just talk over them.
What? Oh, I mean, I'm still going to go, but oh.
Here's creator Joel Hodgson.
Thanks, Max. Oh, this just in. I'm happy to report we've just added a second cheesy feature.
Second feature to remain a mystery.
So that means we'll have two separate unique MST3K live shows out on tour. Hope to see you at one or both of them. It's going to be the movie riff jam of the year.
Kinga, I don't have any more script.
That's because this promo is over. Push the button, Max.
Now, if you heard my first interview with Joel right here on Comic Book Central, it was a fun chat. He held an intervention with me. Yes, he did during that interview. He was trying to get me to let go of my addiction to the thought of him returning as host for the new version, a possible new version at the time. I have to say, his intervention worked. I've let that go. I've come to embrace Jonah Ray as Jonah Heston, the new guy on the Satellite of Love. I'll tell you, he's really got the part down. It's fun to watch him, especially in the live version. Outstanding job. There was a little technical glitch that was thrown his way. He didn't miss a beat during that curveball thrown at him. So really funny guy. But today, I am reconnecting with the original movie riffer, the man who started it all. Here is my chat with Joel Hodgson.
Hey, we got movie sign, you guys.
It's movie sign. Next time on Emergency 911.
Tom,
a duck with an arrow through its neck.
Mode. Come on, man. Snap out of it. Crow,
wake up, movie sign.
We got movie sign.
And joining me now is the creator of Mystery Science Theater 3000. He is currently on tour with the cast of the show. They are taking MST3K live all around the country. We have got movie sign in my backyard now with the one and only Joel Hodgson. Joel, welcome to Comic Book Central. Welcome back to Comic Book Central and welcome to Columbus, hey. Ohio.
Hey, thanks so much, man. We're happy to be here.
Glad to have you here. Look, you and I had a chance to talk. It was Monster Bash a few years back in Pittsburgh. This was pre the return, so we've got a lot to talk about. Have you been to Columbus before?
Oh, sure. I've been to Columbus back when I did stand-up a long time ago. I think they used to have a Funny Bone here, and I did stand-up here, and I've visited here before. So, yeah.
Glad to have you here. What do you think of the venue? I know you're there now. You're checking things out. You got sound check coming up here. What do you think of the venue?
Oh, it's really beautiful, and the stage is great. It's like the biggest backstage I think we've gotten. So that always makes things easier because we have a lot of props and a lot of things going on backstage. So
I was gonna say you got a lot
I'm
of stuff.
Really great, grateful.
A lot of moving parts to this. Okay, so what can folks expect? This is the MST3K Live Watch Out for Snakes Tour, right?
Right. And I guess the easiest way to explain it is, up until this point, Movie Riffing Live has always been kind of like Reader's Theater version of Mystery Science Theater. Even when we started, back in 1992, when the show was originally in production, we did a live Mystery Science Theater, but we didn't have any sets or props. I think all we had was, like, we cut out little theater seats that were made out of cardboard, and we did the puppets back there, and we did this, you know, kind of pretended to do the silhouette. So this is much more ambitious, and you get to see the Satellite of Love, and they do invention exchanges, and you see Moon 13 and the doorway sequence and the Mystery Science Theater. So it's all kind of realized. And so to do that, to make it a visual experience rather than just an audio experience, we had to do a lot just to bring it to the stage. And we're really happy to do that, because Mystery Science Theater is a very visual show, and everything is done in camera. So basically everything in Science Theater is done live and recorded, you know, and so it works. It translates really good to the stage.
Okay. In some cities, there are two separate movies, right?
Yeah.
Select cities.
Yeah. Okay. In venues, we're in Columbus today.
Not tonight, though, in Columbus,
Wednesday.
Though, right? So tonight's show is going to be extra good,
what's
right?
What's that?
So tonight's show in Columbus is going to be extra good because we just get the one, right?
Well, tonight's show's in Columbus. We're doing the one, but we're pulling elements from the second show into it. So you kind of get the highlights from both the shows if you get that. Yeah.
Okay, that'll be very
so
cool.
So we're using elements. We're pulling a few elements from the second show to put in this show.
Okay.
So you get all the highlights, because we have these, Kinga invented these giant, there's a lot of spring snakes in the show because it's the Watch Out for Snakes show. And she brings out these bazookas that are basically the world's largest spring snakes. They're 8 inches in diameter and they're 10 feet long. There's probably about 10 of them in each gun. So it just makes it basically a giant pile, like a bonfire sized pile of these giant spring snakes that they cover somebody with from the audience.
For fans of MST, we should guess. Is it easy to guess where they're going to be shot out of the cannon?
What do you mean? What does that mean? I don't get it. Easy to guess where they're shot out of a cannon. What do you mean?
Okay. Well, we'll be surprised.
Wait, I don't know what you mean. Well,
what's the show, the name of the show based on?
Oh, yeah. Watch Out for Snakes. It's EGA. Yeah.
Okay.
EGA is Watch Out for Snakes. So that's the thematic thing.
Would that be too easy? Would that be too on the nose, though, to take it out of that scene?
No. Well, it's not. It doesn't land in that scene especially. But Kinga is just hyping Watch Out for Snakes. So she's trying to inflate everything and make it all about spring snakes and stuff like that.
I'll still watch my head in that scene. So now, look, when we last spoke, this was going back to 2014 Monster Bash. Very cool event for you too, because you got to meet Arch Hall Jr.
I know
you had been talking, from EGA. So I think everything comes full circle to EGA, I think, when we're going through here. When we spoke last, you mentioned at the time that you were not the mark holder. In your words, you said the mark holder for Mystery Science Theater 3000. A lot has changed since you and I last spoke. Can you fill us in on what went down to put you back at the helm where you belong?
Well, it's very complicated, and to the point where I don't even feel comfortable explaining it.
You got the rights back, though, right?
Yeah, other than, I've always had a percentage of the rights of Mystery Science Theater, but not enough to control it. So I think that's kind of what I meant. And so what happened is we went back in and got those rights. So now my partners and I, Shout Factory, can now do with whatever we want with the brand. And that's why you're seeing, the Kickstarter, the Netflix thing, the live show. And actually, I don't know if you know this, I bet you do, that we're doing a comic book this year. So we're working on that this summer. In fact, tonight I'll have the cover of the comic book on stage to show people.
Oh, nice. That's going to be perfect. Well, we will definitely mention that. You mentioned the crowdfunding campaign. Did that, when we spoke, it was 2014, I think it was the year after that this sort of came about. Was that where you thought this was headed, or did that sort of come up at that point?
There were kind of two paths. One idea was to do MST as a live show and just cultivate it that way, because we did Cinematic Titanic, and that was successful on a lot of levels. And so I thought, I think initially in the early stages, I thought, well, there's a couple of ways to do this. You could sell it to a network, or you could just mount it as a live show and get kind of this new cast on its feet by doing it live, or you could do a crowdfunding campaign. And so obviously we started with the crowdfunding campaign. But I have to say that the new MST is designed to work as a live show. So basically that's why the TV show translates so well to the stage, because I kind of designed it so it would work both ways.
Kickstarters are always, and crowdfunding is always, a roll of the dice. Were you, because when you put that out there and go live, there's always that hesitation of, is anything going to come in? Or is this going to just blow up on our face? Did you kind of think that, or did you know, did you have enough advanced knowledge of this will probably do well?
Well, I didn't have that. I didn't have those feelings until after we got to the other side and we made our goal plus enough to make two extra episodes. And that's when I said, oh man, I could have screwed this up really bad if I would have done this and we wouldn't have gotten enough money. You know, even to get half the money you're going for, we were going for over $5 million.
Yeah.
Even if you got half the money, people would still look at it like, oh, you didn't quite make it. You funded six episodes. You didn't make what you were going to do. So I honestly didn't think about it. I think more than anything, I got to the idea of how much to ask for based on, number one, the cost that we thought the shows would be. We wanted to do a substantial number of shows. We wanted to do a series, and I thought 12 was a fair number. Also, I think a lot of it came from doing Cinematic Titanic, and I just did kind of a naive calculation, like a back of the envelope calculation with the number of people that came to see us at Cinematic Titanic over the years. And there was like 100,000 people. And I just figured, well, there's a percentage of them that would pay to get 12 new episodes. And so I think I used that to kind of get to the number. It's about 100,000 people that are willing to come to a live show. Would those same people put up $100, you know, to bring back the 12 episodes? And so that was what I based it on. And we got really close, actually, about 50,000 people. And I guess the average number that they spent was a little over $100 per person.
Yeah, it was amazing to see that all come together, especially for fans of the show. It was nice to see. Now, what does that mean to Netflix? Like, how does this whole landscape work now with that? Now there's obviously the fan base there. You've got the episodes, they're on there. How does this all work with Netflix, and how do they sort of see all this, and then even moving into maybe another season?
Well, I think they see it as it got a lot of press. It obviously just being the most funded Kickstarter campaign in the history of crowdfunding for film and television was something that a lot of people identified with and a lot of people liked. So it was news, and they know that sometimes you can bring back a show that people like and it'll have meaning. And so fortunately, I think on the other side of it, it's gotten really good reviews. I think we're at 100% right now on RottenTomatoes.com. We're 100% fresh, which happens to be the most well-reviewed Netflix series that's on right now.
Wow.
So we're happen to be in a really good spot. Yeah, thanks. We happen to be in a really good spot with that. And I think that might have meaning for them, just like, oh, this show's not very expensive and it gets good press and people like it. So hopefully they'll want to keep it around.
Now, does that mean they'll fund it this time? Do you have to look at more crowdfunding? How does that work?
You're into the money, aren't you? You really want to.
I just want another season. I just want to make sure we've got another season, and Netflix will sign a check.
You're doing a little Venn diagram, aren't you? Who's the mark holder? Who pays for what?
I just know how these things. Well, I mean, what was the other show? Other Space. I know there's always, you know, you did with Trace Beaulieu. It's like these things are so passionate, but like, are we going to get more? I think that's what the fans want. Are we going to get more of this? And how feasible is that financially? Because we know how that works.
Yeah, and also the thing to be alert to is one Other Space costs what it costs to make three Mystery Science Theaters, and Mystery Science Theater is a 90-minute show. So Other Space was very expensive compared to Mystery Science Theater. But I guess the way it works is the show costs more than what we asked for, because obviously when you're at the front of it, you're approximating, or you're doing a calculation. You're going, well, how much do we think the show's going to cost? And you can try to create a budget, but the show hasn't been created yet. It hasn't been made yet. It's kind of like building a house, and you haven't built a house in 20 years. So how do costs change? Where are the savings? And so I think the show was easily more expensive. And so the Netflix license helped us pay for it. So we didn't go in debt paying for it. So the backers paid for the two-thirds of it, and the Netflix license paid for a third of it. This next season, it would be on Netflix would license it completely, so they would come in and pay the full amount.
Okay.
So that's the way it would work. And so, you know, and in the meantime, you know, we're going to try to stay close to the backers and keep listening to them and see what they like and stay involved with them in the event that we want to do another big project in a few years. For example, Netflix wouldn't want to do a new season. The backers seem like they wanted that. We could do that again, or if we wanted to do some new wrinkle for Mystery Science Theater, and we wanted to get, we thought the backers would be enthused about backing that. We could do that downstream. So in the meantime, it looks like if everything goes right, Netflix would just pick it up like they would traditionally a regular show, and pay the license fee.
And with as with as well reviewed it as is, that's a very good possibility. What did you see in Jonah Ray when you're casting the new guy?
Oh man, you know, I couldn't tell you. It was one of the most instinctual things I ever did. He's really a nice man, and he's very funny, and I don't know what it was. I just think, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I think he has a weird nerd sex appeal. And I think, I hate to say it, but I think that kind of has to be in there for MST. I don't know if I had it, but Mike had it. I think Jonah's got it. There's got to be some nerd, a dork ability, if you want to call it that. So I think Jonah's got that in spades, and he brings it every night to the Watch Out for Snakes tour. He's really talented. He's a better actor than I was. He's really good with props.
He seems to be getting more comfortable in the role, like as the episodes progress. It seemed, you know, even from your Turkey Day marathon and on through episodes, he seems to be just really falling into that role.
Yeah. I've worked with a lot of people over the years, with props, and props are a really funny thing, because a lot of actors cannot work with props. They can act, they can be other people, but once you put things in their hands that may have a spring mechanism or have strings attached that pull things, they get kind of lost. And Jonah is the quickest study I've ever seen. And in Mystery Science Theater, it's really a lot. You're handling a lot of things along the way. And doing all the work for a lot of the robots' arms, they do move this year. They can do some things, but sometimes you really have to do a lot of, like, picking up cards and showing them to Tom and Crow as they read them. That's all Jonah. He's got to do everything for everybody.
Yeah. No, he seems to be getting very comfortable with it. Great set of cameos this year. My goodness. Mark Hamill, Jerry Seinfeld, Aaron Gray, Will Wheaton. I mean, so many. Like, are these people reaching out to you? Did you reach out to them? Did you call in some favors? How did you get everybody?
Yeah, it was really neat. A couple of different things along the way. we found out Mark Hamill was a fan, and I got in touch with him, and he was super sweet about it, and said he'd do a cameo. We got Bobby Lopez to write some really great songs for us. So he's like an EGOT winner, and, you know, wrote all the music for Frozen with his wife. We had Opus Moreschi, who's the head writer on Colbert. We had Elliot Kalin, who's our head writer, who is the head writer from The Daily Show. And we're just really grateful. And Pat Rothfuss, the novelist, did some consulting. I pitched some story ideas to him.
How'd you get Seinfeld?
Did some consulting. Oh, man, he's an old-time friend of mine. I actually wrote on his first HBO special, and I've been on Comedians in Cars and stuff like that. So I've known him a long, long time, and he was very sweet to come and do our show.
I know you've got soundcheck here. You've got movie sign coming up here in about 1 minute, so I'm going to wrap things up here. Good to see the originals, some of the originals back on the show. Good to see you in another role, a couple of roles, actually.
Yeah,
Have you talked to some of the other ones, like Mike and Trace and Frank? Are we possible to see them?
Yeah, we're hoping. I mean, I invited those guys to come be a part of last season, season 11, but it didn't work out. So I'm really hoping to get them next season. You know, obviously come back and get Trace and Frank and Mike to come and do cameos. So that would be super cool. But yeah.
It's going to be fun. We hope we get to see them. Look, this season has been fantastic. It's so great to see everybody back on the screen again. On behalf of my listeners, might I say how comforting it is to have a guy sitting there with his robots making fun of bad movies again back on TV. it's like a warm blanket we just put on. It's fun.
Well, thanks so much, man.
And thank you for helping us to push past the hurting.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. That's what I'm here for.
So looking forward to the show tonight. Looking forward to the next season. Man, have a great tour. Safe travels. And look forward to seeing you.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
And no release date yet on the MST3K comic book from Dark Horse. I did check in with them. I haven't heard back yet. So look, whenever we find that out, we're sure to find out about it first at MST3K.com. They're going to have all the information there. That's also where you go to find out more about the live tour. If it's coming to a city near you, I certainly hope that it is. If it is, go. If you go, remember.
Watch out for snakes.
Who said that?
Watch out for snakes. Indeed, there are a lot of them at the live show. There's snakes everywhere. Thanks so much to Joel Hodgson for stopping by the lair today. It was really fun catching up with him again. All right, more bad movies, more riffing, more with the Mads. The following night, I sat down in the torpedo room. Very cool place there. It's a subaquatic canteen located right inside the Gateway Film Center. I sat down with the mad scientist. It was happy hour. I was more than happy to sit down and chat with the Mads themselves. Yes, the Mads are back. Here is my chat with Trace Beaulieu and Frank Conniff. Let the deep hurting begin.
Deep hurting.
Push the button, Frank.
I am the button.
Another night in Columbus, more movie riffing here in Columbus. It's movie riffing week, apparently, here in Columbus tonight. With the Mads themselves, it's the Mads Are Back Tour. We've got Trace Beaulieu, Frank Conniff. Gents, thanks for joining me today on Comic Book Central, and welcome to Columbus.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Glad to have you both here.
Glad to be here, and apparently the birthplace of riffing.
I thought that was Minneapolis.
It is Minneapolis, but... we sent it downriver or across river. Or is there a river here?
I hope there is. So there's the Scioto. There's
a bad Scioto. Can't walk very long.
Nice Scotch and Scioto. Thank you.
We had the MST3K guys. The current, you know, you're the is it classic MST3K original MST. How do you prefer being referred to when folks refer to you? Because there's like new guys doing this.
Yeah, we're the classic, I guess.
Yeah.
The
original.
the originals, although I'm not an original, Trace is a true original
yes.
Mystery Science Theater guy.
So are you like the Joe Besser?
Yeah, I'm kind of the Joe Besser of the original Mystery Science Theater. I came along a couple of years later, and my episodes are the ones that people don't like as the curtain as much as they
Well, you're pretty close. You're only season two, so
you're
close to original. Let's call that. We'll just call it classic. MST3 class. I like MST3. What sort of look? I saw what those guys did. What madness are you about to unleash on these Columbus audiences here?
You saw the live Mystery Science Theater show
last night. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're
and there's a lot of moving parts to that.
Our show is slightly less elaborate than that show because I saw it in New York last week and it was very entertaining. But our show consists of Trace and myself. One crappy movie and two microphones. And those are all of the elements.
Low overhead.
Yeah, none of those are moving parts.
Low overhead. No snakes?
No snakes.
No snakes on this one?
No.
Okay.
We've stripped it down to just the tastiest jazz riffs of movie riffing.
Okay.
We don't need an orchestra. We don't need a big Cirque du Soleil. We're the purity of riffing.
Are the jazz and what we do is so good that the main character from La La Land talks over it all the time.
Yes.
All right. Now, so here's the thing, because they're doing one movie. They're doing EGA.
Mm-hmm.
In select cities, they're doing two movies. We got EGA last night, but they're incorporating different elements.
That's the other one they're doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is super secret.
It's super secret, so we can't say it. So we're going to keep that. But you guys are doing a bunch of stuff.
We're doing two movies in each town.
Okay.
So each night is a different film.
And when we go back to a town, like we're going back to Denver in a few weeks, which we've been to already a couple of times. We will be premiering a whole new movie there when we get there.
Are you writing like stuff in the hotel room now for that, or is everything done? It's just you're sort of just bringing this out as you go.
What I do with the hotel room really shouldn't be discussed.
Yes.
But
let's not get into that.
Yeah, we're constantly writing.
Yeah, we were always like looking for new films, and then like the one that we're writing now, Trace suggested, and I said okay, fine, and so we're working on that now, and it'll be ready for Denver. But the thing is once we start performing a film, it really evolves over time because we've been performing so much that. We really have been able to polish these like crazy, and there we add new jokes every performance.
I was going to say, because you could probably hit a joke, and then you get that instant feedback, and it's like, that worked really well. Let's get, that one.
Right,
maybe
absolutely.
Not, so let's dump that one quick.
We have a very set of jokes that we do, but then every night we think of new ones to do. If there's a moment in the script that maybe didn't have as strong a riff before, suddenly Trace will think of one, or... Every now and then I'll think of one.
Does news of the day impact?
It does a bit.
A bit.
Okay. Yeah.
Topical things are great, though, for that week. But a lot of times they can't stay in. So if we think of a good topical thing, we'll put it in. But it's much preferable, I think, to do a riff that you can just always do.
How did this particular tour come about?
Well, it started like almost 2 years ago now. Frank approached me. He had a gig that he was... asked to do. Can I mention the venue?
Yes, you can.
This is in Memphis?
This was in Memphis.
Okay, I lived 8 years in Memphis. Was this a...
Atheist Convention.
Yes.
Where was it?
The Atheist Convention.
Yeah.
Okay. Easter
How
weekend.
How did you get that gig?
Atheists love me, you know. Because by the way, I'm not an atheist myself, but I'm a big fan of blasphemy, and I'm frequently blaspheming the Lord, and people
and being paid
and certain
it's called riffing the Lord.
Yes, I riff the Lord all the time, and certain aspects of our audience enjoy that, and so we did the and we're going back in August too.
Such an interesting start to this.
Well, okay, you know, that atheist convention really was a miracle.
And it was, it ended up being actually, ironically enough, a deeply spiritual experience for both Trace and myself.
So
because of the barbecue and the fried chicken that we had in Memphis.
Yes, we've joined the Church of Gus's Fried Chicken.
Oh, in Mason, Tennessee? Or did you go to the original Gus's
Memphis.
In Mason, or did you go
in
Memphis? Okay.
And we've since have been to other ones in like Austin and around.
Because the one in Mason is the original one, about 40 minutes outside, and they I think they leave a little bit out of the recipe in Memphis. So You've tasted almost the best.
We need to go to Mecca.
Mason, Tennessee is the... Yeah, it's a great place.
Am
we'll
I
talk.
Mixing my metaphors of religions?
Well, no. Mecca, you can... Yeah, Gus's fried chicken is... Well, you know, you just made me hungry and homesick. All this, I mean.
But they have the hot chicken here.
They have hot chicken. They have like chili three ways. There's Dirty Franks. It's a foodie town.
Chili three ways and Dirty Franks are two porno movies that I was very disappointed in.
Welcome to Ohio, gents. Welcome to Ohio. Look, we'll talk off mic about some of these things. Talk about the partnership with the Alamo Drafthouse, too, because that's something that's more recent and pretty exciting for this tour, right?
Yeah, that was first set up by our friend Zoe Plate, who was booking for us. And she lives in Denver and got us into the Alamo there, Alamo Drafthouse. And then the manager there talked to all his compatriots at all the other Alamos and said, you got to book these guys because it's a great show. And it has just exploded. We've done the Alamo in Yonkers and Brooklyn, and we're going back to Denver, the new Sloan Lake Alamo.
But we're opening a new Alamo next week in Springfield, Missouri.
Do you get to cut a ribbon?
There was one in Corpus Christi that was new. There was a ribbon cutting ceremony. I don't think we were a part of that. That was like the mayor of the town
did
that.
Do you get a key to the city or anything?
Get to leave the city.
You get a key to the restroom.
We were allowed to change the urinal cakes and keep as many as we wanted.
Yeah. That's something.
But we'll be back in also Lubbock, Texas, and San Antonio, I believe, and Dallas will be back this year.
Okay, so you guys
are going
to
the Phoenix one, too. We're going to
Phoenix.
Phoenix and we're going to Jacksonville, Florida, and not an Alamo Draft House, but we do a lot of Alamos, and then we do other places like where we are right now, the Gateway Film Center, which kind of is in the same spirit of those kind of
these
places.
Independent film houses are so in tune with what we do. The audiences are already trained to come and see this genre of movie. And like the Alamo does a great job of policing their audience, too. So you get kicked out if you talk, which is amazing. If your cell phone goes off, if they have to talk to you twice, you're out of there.
Wow.
So we love the Alamo. We love all these independent, like we're playing the Hollywood Theater in Pittsburgh coming up this fall. So we'll go anywhere.
And cities near and dear to my heart. Yeah. I mean, you're hitting all the sweet spots here. For the listeners, take us back to the beginning a little bit. How did both of you sort of get involved in performing, or where did the initial interest in performing come from? And then take us into how you got involved in Mystery Science Theater 3000 from there.
Well, it really started in Minneapolis in the 80s when there was the comedy boom. And that's where we all met one another. That's where I met Frank doing stand-up. And
we all met in comedy clubs in Minneapolis.
What was the initial interest in performing? Had you, like, did what comedians jumped out at you? Were you yelling at movies?
To me. always been a fan of comedy. Comedians, stand-up comedians, watching The Ed Sullivan Show, watching old movies like Laurel and Hardy and, The Marx Brothers, W.C. Fields. Anything that, was comedy-related was absorbed and was always longing to perform. And this is a great format for writing a lot of jokes and getting immediate feedback.
Do you remember your first gigs? Like when you first started? Was it getting into comedy?
Like most comedians, I started doing open mics first in New York and then in Minneapolis.
What was your first night? Did you kill or bomb?
Pretty much bomb. Okay. And I bombed mostly for the first year that I did stand-up.
That didn't scare you off.
Yeah, no, and I think a lot of comics will tell you the same thing.
You were like the William Westmoreland of open mics, the amount of bombing. I'm sorry, kid. This is a very old reference.
For the millennials out there, can we update that a little?
Get your history books.
I just started doing open mics and just failed a lot and eventually figured out how to do it.
What did you learn?
I don't know. It's hard to say. You just learn from being, first of all, the more you're on stage, the more comfortable you get. And you just learn It's not an overall thing that I learned. It's like an it's like, oh, that joke doesn't work. I need to do another one. Oh, that joke got a big laugh. Well, that's staying in the act. Let's see if I can put some other jokes next to it. Let's see if I can tag it. Let's see if I can expand on that premise.
So not much has changed in the template for your work.
Yeah, so it's it really is. And like as I was saying about doing our riffing show live, it evolves on stage, and stand-up is very much like that too. And there's the only place to learn how to do it is by getting up and performing every night. And you know, it's for most people, for myself, it's a hard road. You know, it takes a while,
you have a tough skin.
Well, the thing is, but I just had a passion for doing it, and that's what just kept me going. I was determined to try to get better at it and to be a part of it, and I just had that that desire to do it. You know, some people it's like a whim. Oh, well, maybe I'll get up and do stand up and see how it works out. And some people end up becoming comedians that way, but that wasn't my route at all.
I think Seinfeld said that, like, you have to get up, like, you feel you have to do it. It's not like, oh, maybe I should.
It's really a compulsion. It's something you really want to do, and it's ultimately very rewarding if you stick with it, not just because of becoming a better comedian, but because of the friendships that you make, and you're just part of a world that you want to be a part of.
And it leads to television series sometimes. Was that your experience kind of growing up with stand-up, or how did you...
Well,
was it more writing?
I'd started doing improv, and I really like working with an ensemble. And when the stand-up comedy boom hit in the 80s, everyone realized, oh, you could actually make some money going and doing stand-up in North Dakota or Wisconsin. So our little improv troupe kind of disbanded. And I missed that. And I tried doing stand-up and really missed working with other people. And Mystery Science came along, and it was like, oh, this is great, because it's a lot of like-minded people learning off other people and relating to them and just getting better at writing and writing sketches. And that's what I really craved. And then getting to do a lot of other stuff, like build props and design sets and things like that. So it really fed a whole, you know, palette of creative stuff that I wanted to explore.
For those that haven't seen the original series, of course, Shout Factory, everything.
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix, Shout Factory, everything. Yeah. I mean, they've got their own, you know, app on Roku, so it's out there, everybody can see it. If somebody hasn't seen it, like, oh, maybe I should check this thing out. What do we need to know about your characters? Trace, we'll start with yours.
Well, I played...
you've got two of them.
I played the evil Dr. Forrester, the mad scientist.
Full name.
Dr. Clayton Deborah Forrester, who shot Joel into space and forced him to watch bad movies. Accompanied by his robot companions, which he had built out of the spare parts from the ship. And I played one of those robot companions, so I also got to riff the movie as well. So I got to build my riffing chops.
The robot being?
The robot was called Crow T Robot.
Yeah,
The robot.
I'm gonna be very obvious here. Can we just get a little bit? Or do we get any in the show, in the live tour? Do we get a little...
What? Do we get any Crow?
Yeah, do we?
Just
even a hint.
Crow sounds like me. So if a joke comes out and it sounds like Crow saying it, it's because Crow sounds
it's
like
a little different. He's a little more Crowish, so. Okay. Yeah.
There's some Crow stuff in there. There's also some, you know, I think our material is if you listen to our show, you will hear other voices. And they'll tell you to kill. No, they'll tell you to drive on into oncoming traffic.
You hear a lot of voices, do you?
Oh, there's a lot of voices, yeah. But I was fortunate because I got to do two characters. And, you know, that's when, you know, Frank and I got to work so much together as a team. And that's really what drove me anyway to say, yeah, let's do this again. Let's get back, you know, to what we love doing. And it's so much fun working with Frank and on the road and writing material and you know, getting the immediate feedback.
Yeah, there's a definite chemistry. And Frank, you play...
I played Frank, or as he was sometimes known, TV's Frank. I was Dr. Clayton Forrester's bumbling yet lovable sidekick.
Henchman, sidekick,
Second banana, all of it.
Okay.
Yes.
He's kind of like Penny from The Big Bang Theory.
I would have to see that show to confirm that.
You've seen it.
No, I've never
seen it. Yes, you've seen it.
I've never seen Big. I never have ever.
She doesn't have a last name. Well, she has a last name. We have no idea what it is. Does Frank have a last name? Or is the first name TV's?
No.
And the second
actually, ironically enough, Frank's last name is Big Bang Theory.
Even though
I've never seen the show.
Now, there's a scoop. There's a scoop we have right there. Correct me if I'm wrong. You, during your five-year run, you came in season two.
Season two, yes.
Stayed for five seasons. Were you the one picking most of the movies or all of them?
I did. That was my job.
You were the movie picker.
I was the movie picker.
So we have you to thank or to blame for the evil... The evil that is Manos.
The Manos, the Hands of Fate. I was the one who found it and brought it to the world. And
How did you leave this upon us?
It was in a box of VHS tapes that it was my job to look at.
Did you question it at all? Did anybody question this coming into it? Did anybody think that this was not a good idea?
No, we were everyone immediately was saying, this is an atrocity, this is a nightmare, this is horrifying, we have to do it.
That's okay, so that was the lock coming
right,
into it.
Right.
Okay. Do either of you have a favorite movie? I mean, obviously Manos gets a lot of press. I think even Joel has said it's not his favorite riff, but do either of you have a favorite?
I Accuse My Parents, I'm fond of, and I don't know, it's all a blur to me, pretty much, you know.
You did a lot of them.
I like any of the shorts that we did, you know, the Here Comes the Circus or Mr. Be Natural.
These are like the 50s, kind of like these little like educational things, but they're really wildly creepy.
Right, they had such a bombastic view of the world and women and... you know, very pro-American kind of stance on everything. And they're so great to go up against because they have that attitude. And they have the quaintness of being made when they were in the 50s. And they're short. You know, I think they're the perfect length for riffing. They're like 10 to 20 minutes long.
Yeah, if that.
And length, I think, is an important thing with comedy. We do a couple of films now in our repertoire. They're around the 70-minute mark, 71. Yeah.
Yeah, if you start getting, 90, 100 minutes, I mean, it
becomes a bit of an ordeal when it gets longer like that. And on the show, if they were that long, we would cut the films, you know.
So. I keep telling Christopher Nolan, Dunkirk is too long. It's not going to play as a comedy. It's just not
funny. You just
can't
riff it as well, can you?
It's not
funny. You're actually working some of the shorts into this current tour, right?
Right.
Does those pop in from time to time?
New shorts, not ones that we did on Mystery Science Theater, but new ones.
So all brand new stuff that we can look forward to.
And there's one that we've been doing, our 2017 hit that we did with the Riff Tracks guys. In their summer shorts special that I think we'll be doing tonight and for the next few weeks, as long as no one realizes they've seen it before.
Now, we've mentioned the new Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return. It's on Netflix. Have you both seen it in its entirety? Have you seen elements of it?
I've seen the title. But I haven't seen the show.
You have Netflix.
I have Netflix, and I see it.
Is it in your queue?
It's not in my queue.
Did you add it to your playlist?
I didn't know I could until
I think you
just
can.
Mentioned.
Yeah. You might get Netflix free. There may be a deal that you could probably work out. Okay.
So you want to be influenced.
So you haven't seen any of them yet?
I've seen the title. I haven't seen any of it because I'm busy watching House of Cards. Better Call Saul.
There's a bunch of shows you got to catch up. And you guys are on the road, so you probably don't get to see a lot of TV.
Although I haven't seen the show, but I did see the live show last Friday night, and it was very good.
So when I talked to Joel, he mentioned he sort of threw the invitation out to everybody that was involved in past iterations of the show. Some are on there, some are not.
Yeah. Well, he should have mailed the invitation, not just throwing it out.
Did your invitation get lost in the mail?
Throwing it out
is not an effective method of an actual tangible invitation. Yes. Much better.
The way he phrased it was just we couldn't work things out on season 11. Mm-hmm. So you both aren't on it.
No.
Would you like to be on it? Would you like to
it's
be on season,
late,
12?
Oh, too, season 12? Oh,
if there's a season 12, there's not announced yet. There's probably a good vibe on it. Would you bring those characters back?
I think we'll wait and see what happens. You know,
I don't know what that means.
It means I'm avoiding the question.
I know you are, but it's my job to press you on this at all times.
It would all depend.
Do you have an interest in doing it?
It would all depend on what the offer is,
right,
what they want us to do.
I want final cut, and I want a direct.
I'm going to say that's probably not good. So I don't even know if Joel gets final cut.
It's not something that we can answer yet because the next season hasn't happened yet.
Do you miss the characters? Do you miss doing those characters?
I love being associated with TV's Frank, but the thing is by doing the Mads Are Back, I get to work with Trace anyway. So if I weren't doing the show and I wasn't doing this and you asked me that, I would say, yeah, I miss working with Trace, but I am working with Trace, so right. So it's kind of
but you could
great.
Work with Patton Oswalt as your son.
That's a possibility.
You've seen anything of his performance?
Yeah, I've seen and you know, he's we've emailed back and I've been a friend with Patton's for like 20 years, and we've emailed back and forth about it, and he's kind of pitched me ideas of, like, I'd love to do. I won't tell you specifically what his ideas were, but he has ideas for how he would do it. So it's out there in the air. So it, like I said, it all depends on how things would work out. Patton is a lot busier than I am. He has a sitcom coming on this fall, so a lot of it would be getting him to be available to do it.
Ooh,
I think.
Why don't you get on a sitcom?
Yeah.
I was going to say you might need to send a few more emails here. That could be. Now you talk about because you were on a sitcom before, Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Talk
about comic books.
Uh-huh.
What you know? Any more interest in comic? Everything's a comic book these days. Everything's
right.
A comic book property. They're making Mystery Science Theater 3000 in a comic book. Trace, you've written a comic book.
I was near the writing of the comic. Yes.
You have a comic book out there.
Yeah.
Any interest in writing Mystery Science Theater 3000, the comic book, or getting into comic book themed properties?
They've moved forward on Mystery Science Theater comic book. There's no interest in having us write on that. So,
if it's a continuing series, there would always be.
I think the most satisfying thing right now for me is writing jokes that Frank and I both get to perform and get to hear the immediate feedback from a live audience. We worked for such a long time in a lot of different television shows where you're just throwing jokes into the show and some live, some die, some get to the air. You don't know if someone's laughing out there. And this is rock and roll. This is the best, being in front of an audience and hearing laughter. That is my drug.
Did Cinematic Titanic feed sort of all this?
Absolutely.
And then you're like,
you know, the only reason Cinematic Titanic ended was because Joel didn't want to do it anymore. And so this, and we love doing it. And we just wanted to perform live more. And this is the result of that, as Trace and I. And it's also much more kind of a better business plan. It's just being me and Trace. We're kind of able to make a living from it, which we didn't from Cinematic Titanic at all, you know, because it was a lot of expenses involved in doing it. So, so Cinematic Titanic, one of the best experiences of my professional life, and this is like a continuation of that.
If Cinematic Titanic was the Sea View in Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, the Mads with Frank Conniff and myself is the Flying Sub.
Yes.
There you go. And you guys get to be yourselves.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah.
That's how great is that?
We get caught in the act of being ourselves.
Yeah. Which is always great. Look, we're coming up on 30 years. I can't believe it. We're coming up on 30 years since, you mentioned the original
Yeah, 87, I think
88 at premiere.
Are you going to fight me on this?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, you're right. Yeah. Right, I'm 88.
I'm not going to fight. We're either in the 30th year as we sit here, or we're approaching the 30th year.
That's frightening.
So many years, I mean, we talk about Riff Tracks, we talk about Cinematic Titanic, the new MST3K, you guys are out there. Why do you think the fans just love watching you guys watch movies?
People love to laugh, you know, yeah. People like being entertained, and the format of movie riffing, which was a new form of comedy invented by Trace and J. Elvis Weinstein and Joel Hodgson when they started doing Mystery Science Theater, is just a form that really works. I do movie riffing shows in New York City just with other comedians. We did Independence Day the night before the 4th of July, and at this club called QED in Queens, and people are always doing, and there's a Master Pancake Theater in Austin. They get up and do. It's just a form that these guys invented, and it's like improv or stand up comedy. You know, it's the kind of thing anyone who has a talent for it can get involved with doing it, and people are very entertained by it when it works.
Give us the website. How do people find where you guys are going? How do they know where to get tickets, and where are you guys on social media?
Our Facebook, the Mads are back on Facebook. Frank and I are both on Twitter, and themadsareback.com, our website, has all of the show dates and information. And Joe Martin, he's sitting way over on the other side of the room, should be given a great deal of credit for helping us book these venues. He's absolutely exploded.
And people want you to come out. They can
get in touch with Joe directly.
A lot of our bookings, this whole thing has been a very grassroots phenomenon with us. It's the fans who've made this happen.
That's amazing. I'm looking forward to it. I just have one more question. Frank, would you push the button?
Certainly. If there's a button there, I press the salt shaker button.
The Mads are back. MST3K is back. It's all back. It is a movie riffing renaissance. So happy they're all back. Once again, my thanks to Joel Hodgson, Trace Beaulieu, and Frank Conniff for spending some time with us today. The links to their live shows, you know where to find them, in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. Go see these shows. You'll love them. You're going to have a great time. A lot of fun. While you're at my website, be sure to check out past conversations on Comic Book Central you might have missed. They're all located there in the archives section. More than 200 guests have spent some time here in the lair. So take a listen if you missed any of those. You also want to subscribe to the show on iTunes if you haven't done that already. All the episodes are there. You won't miss any of the fun that's coming up. I'm going to be taking the show on the road, as I mentioned. You'll catch those episodes as well. And don't forget, if you like what you're hearing, leave a review on iTunes. Really appreciate when you do that. It just takes a minute. Blueberry, Stitcher, all the episodes are on those services as well. So check those out. Be sure to follow the show on social media as well and share the lair on social media. Facebook and Twitter links, they're on the website. And I want to hear what's on your mind. Look, if you have a favorite movie riff from Mystery Science Theater 3000, Riff Tracks, The Mads, any of those, click that Signal Me tab right there on the website. You can send me an email that way. Drop me a line at joe@comicbookcentral.net. You can also record a voicemail message at the website. I want to hear from you. Now, I will say this. I'm going to be taking a little bit of a break here. A lot going on behind the scenes. Working on a few surprises. Scheduling some special guests coming up. I'm preparing to take Comic Book Central on the road, both to Terrificon in Connecticut and the Cincinnati Comic Expo as well. So be sure to check that both of those conventions out. So if you've got a little bit of time here to catch up on some of those past episodes I mentioned. So if you haven't heard them yet, check them out during the break. Of course, again, share the lair. Share Comic Book Central on social media. If you're traveling this summer or if your friends are hitting the road, tell them all about Comic Book Central. Download the episodes, take them with you. You can catch up that way as well. Stay tuned on Facebook and Twitter. Follow the show on at facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork, at comicbookctrl on Twitter. I will announce the date of the next show there. I'll announce the guest that's coming up. By the way, I've got some cool Marvel and DC themed shows on tap, so stay tuned to social media. You're going to be the first to know when I announce the next episode and some of those other things I've got cooking. Until we get together again, watch out for snakes. Keep on riffing. Keep reading those comics. And thanks so much for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 imported license. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Oh, great. Pretty good. What do you think?
It stinks.